Welcome to each of you who connected in to this question and answer program. I am Robert Rogers, founder of Parkinson's Recovery in 2004. Parkinson's Recovery provides support, information, and resources to individuals searching for natural options that offer the promise of providing relief from the symptoms associated with the diagnosis of Parkinson's disease. I have quite a few questions that were submitted that I want to respond to in the program today. Many of the questions begin with, Dear Dr. Rogers or Dr. Robert, I want to just say at the outset and remind everyone that I am a researcher, a PhD. My degree is from Michigan State. My master's degree is from Cornell University. I am not a medical doctor. Anything that I might say or recommend comes from purely a research perspective. Please, if you think it's advice or recommendation, check with your medical doctor. They're the folks that are certified and able to provide clear recommendations to you personally. I might also say I have noticed recently that a number of people out there offering one program or another call themselves doctor, and their intent is to give you the impression they are a medical doctor when in fact they are a nurse or they are a chiropractor or they have some other perhaps certification that qualifies them to be called doctor. So I just want everyone to know at the outset, I am not a medical doctor. I am a researcher, a PhD, and so please don't take anything I might recommend as personal recommendation to you for your medical kind of program. First question comes from Mohammed Ibrahim from Egypt in the Middle East. There are actually two questions. I'm going to respond to the second question that has to be about diet in just a minute, but I want to move to the first question. So, Dr. Rogers, laser therapy, ketogenic diet, aqua hydration therapy from John Coleman, Qigong, etc., etc., etc. If these methods really do help with recovery of Parkinson's, why does the World Health Organization, the American Food and Drug Organizations, the Michael J. Fox organizations, and all organizations concerned with disease did not recognize these methods to address the problem? So, what I'd like to recommend that you do, Mohammed, is go to your local library there in Egypt and see if you can acquire a new, brand new video titled What the Health, H-E-A-L-T-H, What the Health. The bottom line of that video is follow the money and you'll understand what's really going on out there. When I first founded Parkinson's Recovery, now 12 years ago, almost 13, I looked around and I thought, wow, nobody out there is actually providing a service where we scan the environment, we look for all sorts of natural options that offer the promise of providing relief from Parkinson's symptoms. I thought, well, that's what I'm going to do. I need to have a purpose in my life, so I'm going to set the intention to found and create this organization, which is just me, Parkinson's Recovery, and as a researcher, I'm going to scan the environment with no screening out of anything, and we're going to begin to identify lots of natural options that, in fact, I have some assurance are helping at least one, if not many, many individuals. That's what we've done for the past 12 years. Now, I have to tell everyone, what I really wasn't smart enough 12 or 13 years ago to realize is the answer to the question, why is no one else doing that, is there's no money to be made out of it. So I've been subsidizing Parkinson's Recovery now for 13 years. So that's the reason. If there was money to be made, I would have competitors. I'd have other people out there that are doing what I'm doing, but there's not. So I think the simple answer that I have for you, Mohammed, is get the DVD, and for the rest of you, too, I know it's available at our public library. I just ordered it, and it's brand new. Apparently, it's quite hilarious and quite entertaining and quite informative. So it's not what the H-E-L-L, but rather what the health, H-E-A-L-T-H. Next question comes from Jay. Why is there so little talk on the Heinz amino acid approach? I've been using it since April, and it seems to work. Only urine tests by mail and occasional phone consults make it not that difficult, especially once you establish your dosage. I'd like to hear from some long-term users. Is there a downside other than my $175 cost a week with no insurance company that I don't know about? I had scheduled Dr. Marty Heinz, the founder of the amino acid therapy, to be a guest on the radio show about 4 days before the hurricane in Florida. And at the day that we were scheduled, he emailed and said, "I'm so sorry, but I have a house in Florida that has been damaged seriously by the hurricane. I've got to get down there." And I haven't heard from him since. And it's been, as you know, a little while now. So I'll set the intention to contact Dr. Heinz. He has agreed graciously to be a guest on the radio show. So we'll be able to ask him any questions about this amino acid therapy. He did tell me in an email that I had mentioned that it was pretty expensive, and $175 is, for most people, pretty expensive. But he said it's, you know, it depends on the individual and what the situation is, so you can't just make a blanket statement about the costs. Now, Jay, you're also saying, "I'd like to hear from some long-term users." I have heard back. There's no systematic kind of a research here, literally just people tell me. And, of course, I talk to hundreds and hundreds of people every month. And so basically what some people have said is this really is clearly helping them, just as it is with you. Other people will report, "Well, I've used it for about 6 months, and I'm really not getting any relief. I'm just going to give it up. It's just not something that I think is helping." So we've got scattered reports. Some people are pleased with this particular approach. Other people are disappointed. And I have to say, that's really a similar kind of a feedback that I get from many, many reports of these kinds of therapies. Now, it may be that the person just didn't hang in there long enough and give it a long enough trial, and that's the reason why they were disappointed with the results. It could be they didn't do what was recommended in terms of taking these amino acids. So there are a lot of reasons why the person might have been disappointed. Or I think another logical explanation is the causal factors that are associated with contributing to their symptoms have nothing to do with amino acids. There are other causes that need to be addressed. And so in the end, it is exciting to know that this therapy is available. It's exciting to know it is helping some people. Now, your question really is, "I don't get it. How come there's so little talk about this?" And, Jay, I've got the same answer for you as I had for Mohammed. Follow the money. If you look at some of the traditional treatments that are available, and if you look at how much money they spend in advertising, we're talking millions and millions and millions of dollars every single year, multi-millions of dollars. And if you look at Parkinson's recovery, zero. If you look at Marty Heinz, I don't know for sure. I guess we could ask him, but I don't think he does any advertising. It's all basically based on references and referrals and programs like mine. So the bottom line is that there's very little exposure to that. And the other kind of reason I'll offer to both you, Jay, and Mohammed is the search engines have a strong preference for traditional medical therapies and treatments. And so for anybody like myself that is out there scouring around trying to identify other optional treatments, new treatments, treatments that are not on the medical radar at this point, we do not rank high in the search engines, but the traditional medical kind of therapies do. So there are several understandable reasons. And Jay, let me just suggest, why not get that book, that DVD that I recommended that I think you'll find to be very entertaining, and that'll probably offer to you some additional explanation. And finally, look out for my announcement. I know Dr. Heinz will be a guest on the show. We just don't know quite when, hopefully sooner rather than later. Next question, dear Dr. Rogers, When consuming carbidopa levodopa, the blood pressure remains fairly normal. When the medication wears off, the blood pressure rises. Taking blood pressure medication may make the blood pressure dangerously low when the carbidopa levodopa is in effect. How does one lower the blood pressure without taking medication when the carbidopa levodopa has been metabolized and the next dosage is not for many hours? For example, sleeping with elevated blood pressure in the morning due to no medication at all during the night. So, first of all, David, this obviously is a question about medication, and as I mentioned earlier, it's a good one to ask your doctor about, not a good one to ask me. Second, just speaking from a researcher's perspective, the issue of high blood pressure is typically one that involves the cramping of the blood vessels. So what happens is when you're taking medication, those vessels tend to relax and there's plenty of room for the blood to pass through. And yet when you're not taking the medication, then there is some what I would call cramping of the blood vessels. There's less space for the blood to basically travel through. And so what happens is the body automatically increases the pumping action of the heart, and so the heart begins to work much harder to be able to press the blood through the body. Why does that happen? So first of all, there I would say two reasons. One, there may be calcium deposits in the vessels, something that you can explore with your doctors and medical professionals. And so those collections of calcium deposits will reduce the volume that is available for the blood to pass through in the particular vessels. Well, why is the calcium there and not in the bones? Well, the reason typically is the parathyroid gland is simply not working quite the way it should. The parathyroid is the one that's responsible for calcium distribution, so it may be basically sending the calcium to the wrong place. If you're taking a calcium supplement, you may want to evaluate that with your doctor. It may be that you're actually putting more calcium into the wrong places rather than the right places. There are ways to correct that distribution of calcium. The second explanation is really a lifestyle explanation. And so what happens is we lead very busy, very active lifestyles, and that basically winds up cramping our entire tissues throughout our entire body, including our vessels. One of the solutions then, over the long run, is to begin to make some changes in lifestyle so that you're not quite as pressed and stressed every single day. So let me just give you a hypothetical example of somebody who has a very stressful job, just by way of explaining what the change might entail. So let's just say, hypothetically, there's a person, we'll give him the name Jim, and Jim is a medical doctor, and he sees basically one patient every 15 minutes. Now, that means that, first of all, he has to read the medical record, then he has to talk with the patient. He gets about 5 minutes to do that. He has to go out. He has to write the prescriptions. He has to write notes into the medical record, and then he has to see the next patient. So basically, four patients an hour, calculate up, times eight. You're talking about a stressful job. So one of the lifestyle changes, if you're talking about high blood pressure, and the cramping of the vessels would be, okay, throughout the day, how about relaxing those demands, changing that particular method of or approach, which obviously has worked for quite a while, but now it's taking a toll on the body. So instead of seeing one patient every 15 minutes, is perhaps just change the design so that at least, let's say there's at least 30 minutes with each patient so that you're not quite pressing so aggressively with each person. So lifestyle changes can change the issue with the cramping of the blood vessels. But I have another idea for you, David, that I really want to suggest that you give a tryout with. It costs nothing. And for some people, it's really a wonderful solution. And that is inclined bed therapy. There's actually a website, and it's that title, So if you'll type in inclined, I-N-C-L-I-N-E-D, bed, B-E-D, therapy, therapy.com, you'll see lots of story about the benefits of raising the header of your bed 6 inches. How do you do that? Well, you put boards or books under the legs at the head of your bed, which means that your head is about 6 inches above your feet. It may be that will provide some wonderful, wonderful relief for the distribution of the blood as you're sleeping at night. Give it a try. See if it doesn't work. Look at the website. Obviously, nobody's making any money off of this. There's no product to purchase. But from what I've heard back from people who've done this, and I've done it myself, I want to say, boy, I really think this is something that everybody ought to try out. Next question from Betty. Well, thanks for your holiday gift. You're welcome, Betty. It is my way of spending the holidays, is to offer these gifts to everyone. I have a few questions. Is there a, quote, best diet for Parkinson's or persons with Parkinson's symptoms? I know low protein works better with cinnamon. That's right, Betty. And when you're on medications, be sure to consult closely with your doctor. There are these interactions with protein. It means that the medicines don't work as well, et cetera, et cetera. So when it comes to diet, probably you need to be consulting with your medical professionals in order to make sure that that protein balance is what it needs to be. Is there a preferred multivitamin that works better than most for persons with Parkinson's disease? So there are a number of questions embedded here. And when it comes to multivitamins, I just want to point out to everyone that these particular supplements are basically devoid of high energy. When you've got live food, when you've got plants that you've just harvested, they have incredibly high energy. When you're harvesting out in the wild, that has incredibly high energy, and that gives quite a boost to the body. Well, when you've got a commercial manufacturer of vitamins, then you've depleted the potency considerably. I don't care what the quality of the product is. Now, clearly multivitamins can help. There's no doubt about it. I don't have any specific brand to recommend for you or for persons with Parkinson's symptoms. I would recommend, however, to up the ante, as they say, if you happen to be a poker player. I would say, look, vitamins are just food. Why not begin juicing? Go to a health food store and look at what's available in terms of organic vegetables and begin to choose whatever you're called out to choose to put in the basket, purchase, and juice. Now, when I say juice, I'd like to suggest that instead of separating the bulk, you basically just mix up it all. We use a Vitamix ourselves, but there are several kind of mixers that are great. You basically just throw it in the mix, so put a little fresh water in and mix it up for about a minute, and then you drink it. And that's what's going to give you some wonderful nutrition instead of sort of relying on pretty costly vitamins. And so you're going to reduce the cost significantly, and you're going to increase the potency of what it is that you're actually putting into your body. Now, when I say you look and put into the basket whatever you're called out to put into, that's a way of using your own instinct about what your body needs. And so if you look at all of a sudden an eggplant and you think, oh, that color's really good, I think I need that. Well, you do need that. So get the eggplant, juice it. Your body will thank you immensely. Now, Betty continues, I have tried many brands for my husband, just not sure if tablets are better than capsules or if a liquid version is tolerated or absorbed better. And again, I just want to suggest, I think the more you can get to the original source of nutrition, which is from the actual plants, I think the better off you're going to be. When you've got capsules, as it turns out, a lot of these, basically, when they're sitting on the shelves of the supplement stores, the potency is degraded significantly. So initially, when they're put into the little capsules, the potency is okay, but they're shipped out, They sit on the shelves for anywhere from 1 month to a year. And by the time you actually purchase the supplement, there's not much value left. And so you're spending a lot of money and not getting much value in return. And there's a lot of different value differences in terms of the extent to which you're getting what it is that you're paying for. And so the best bet, and one that takes just a little bit of effort, a little bit of time, but it's fun and interesting, is to do it yourself, to basically juice the food yourself. Now, you've also asked Betty a question, and it's similar to what others have asked. So I want to combine your question with those of several others, and basically these questions say, what's the best diet for persons with Parkinson's? Is it, for example, in one of the specific questions that I received, a paleo diet? Now, a paleo diet is based on the types of foods that are presumed to have been eaten by early humans. And that consists chiefly of meat, fish, vegetables, and fruit, and you exclude dairy or grain products, and, of course, processed food. I interviewed Dr. Walls. The Walls diet is a rather famous diet that's a paleo diet. I interviewed her on the radio show about 5 years ago, and she was a strong proponent of the paleo diet for persons with neurological challenges. She herself had MS and was able to address her symptoms successfully. So let's just focus just for a minute on the paleo diet. First of all, my sense about the best diet for a person is it depends. I used to tell people several years ago, look, I don't think you can go wrong if you'll juice the fresh veggies, and that's what I just recommended to you. But remember what I said was, what are you called out to get? Now, the reason I gave that qualification is there are some individuals with Parkinson's symptoms that have a folate insensitivity. In other words, believe it or not, they are allergic to eating foods like spinach and lettuce. Now, we're not talking about a large number of people, but if that happens to be you, and if you are a person who routinely eats lettuce and spinach and foods that have folates, what you're going to discover is if you stop eating those foods in about 2 weeks, you're going to begin to feel a whole lot better. So the bottom line is there is no single one best great idea for a diet with persons with Parkinson's. You're best advantaged to really listen to your body and figure out, well, what are you allergic to know your body, and then to obviously screen out those foods that you cannot tolerate personally. Now, the second comment that I want to make about the paleo diet is it does include meat and fish. Now, when it comes to fish, there are, for example, fish that you can get at the store that would be wild salmon. Okay, that's typically great. It comes from the ocean. It has relatively few toxins. It has high energy, and we eat quite a bit of that here at our home. But if the salmon comes from a farm, if it's farm-raised salmon, it has a lot of toxins. Don't eat it. So just to say fish is great, no, that's not right. It depends on the type of fish. Now, out here in the Pacific Northwest, there's a lot of shellfish that's available. I would stay away from that because, again, that's what tends to be contaminated by all sorts of PCBs and toxins and other kind of awful things that are now contaminating our ocean floors. So anything that's swimming out off of the surface of the ocean ground level of the ocean is going to be better. Anything that's wild is going to be better. Let's go to meat. I have a recommendation for everyone listening. There is a DVD that was made about 5 years ago that's absolutely fascinating, and it has to do with the problems with ingesting meat. It's called Forks Over Knives. A couple of researchers have spent their entire careers, we're talking 40 years of intensive research, going to look at one country after another, asking the question, why do the people in country A live so much longer and are so much healthier than in country B? Study after study after study after study after study. And they confirm and reconfirm and reconfirm and reconfirm one finding. The fact is that meat tends to be the culprit. Now, watch the video and draw your own conclusion. I invited actually each of these investigators to be a guest on the show, but they were not available. So I don't have the opportunity for you to actually listen to them tell their stories. But the video is available, and it is quite amazing. You can most likely acquire the video from your public library. There's no need to actually pay for it. I also heard a fascinating observation from one of the most recent radio show interviews that I aired on the radio show program. This was an interview with macrobiotic New England specialist Warren Kramer. And so he was talking about nutrition as well. And what Warren said is something I actually have not heard from anyone for 12 years, and I've done 250 radio show interviews. I found it fascinating. I don't know if it's true or not, but he's had 30 years of experience in helping people with their diet, observing what works and what doesn't, and he's dealt with many individuals with Parkinson's symptoms. What Warren said was, look, what I would suggest is, if your primary issue turns out to be tremors, I would suggest that you stop eating meat products. Now, do we have any research evidence to prove that that's true? No, we don't. But I found it fascinating, first of all, that that was his very clear and unequivocal suggestion. So if you do have tremors and if you do eat meat, look, how about switch out for about 6 weeks or so and just put it aside. Do what we say is the gold test of whether or not something is going to work or not, and that is take it out of your diet and see if you feel better or not, see if the tremors are better or not. That's the best kind of an approach that you can give. So we don't know. I can't say stop eating meat. If you love to eat meat, heavens, if that's a joy that gives you wonderful satisfaction, then stay with it. But if you're up to experiment, I would suggest, how about putting that aside for now? Everybody's body is different. Some people can tolerate meat, some bodies cannot. And so for sure, consider that as a possibility. Now, the paleo diet also excludes dairy. That's a great idea. I just want to say to everybody, there have been three very aggressive, excellent design studies that show that dairy is a predictor of Parkinson's symptoms. They track people over a long period of time. And what predicts people who have Parkinson's symptoms, the one factor, the one predictor winds up being ingestion of dairy. So get dairy substitutes. They're just as tasty, and yet they won't cause that harm. When I say just as tasty, try coconut, milk, almond milk, all sorts of other substitutes other than dairy. Also, there's an exclusion of processed food, and I would say to that, oh my heavens, yes. If you're eating food out of a box, you're going to continue to be sick. The fact is that this genetically modified foods can create, I say can, I'm not saying always, but it's very possible contributor to neurological symptoms. So if it's in a box, if you're going to a standard grocery store, change the habit. Go to a store where you're buying food that is grown locally and begin to learn how to do a little cooking if you're not accustomed to that. Change some habits and end the processed food. You, in the United States, we don't know what's genetically modified and not. Now, in Europe, you're doing much better than us, but here we don't know. And so don't take anybody's word for it. I would just say begin to acquire the food that you're putting into your body from a trusted source, which typically would be your local farmer. Now, that's a lot of discussion about the paleo diet. There's also a diet called ketogenic, and that is one that's pretty high fat. It's a diet that's recommended to basically facilitate the creation of ketones in the body. A ketone is a natural sugar, not an actual sugar, but a natural sugar in the body. So it's used and recommended for individuals who have epileptic seizures, and it really is very effective. So what doctors will often recommend for people whose medicines are not working to reduce the seizures is they put them on very, very high-fat diet. There is a researcher at National Institute of Health who's devoted his life to investigating a ketogenic diet to address Parkinson's symptoms. His name is Dr. Veech, V-E-E-C-H. There is an individual in Washington, D.C., who is a collaborator with Dr. Veech, who has Parkinson's, and he's one of their volunteer subjects, so to speak, and he has concocted a little ketone cocktail that he drinks every single morning. Now, I'm reporting this off the top of my head, but it's high fat, and so it includes some coconut oil, some butter, some even whipped cream, if I recall, and some coffee. In other words, it's just a really very, very high-fat diet. And I guess Bill, the one who's been doing this, I've asked to be on the radio show several times, but he's just not been available. But so some people are using that and finding that it has some degree of benefit. I want to say that my own personal experience is that a much better and more effective approach for me is simply to do fasting. I don't mean big time 4 or 5 day or a week fasting. Basically, what I'm saying is you can eat in the morning your breakfast, and then just you don't eat until the evening. You skip your lunch. You eat a meal at, let's say, early evening at 6 or 7, and then you don't eat until the next morning. So you're fasting for basically 12 hours. That does the same thing. That creates and generates ketones for your body. So the different ways of basically generating ketones other than the high-fat diet. That's an option. It's an option to consider. It's an option that you can actually experiment with. And so you have to use your own intuition if that calls out to you. For me, instead of basically having every day those high fats, what works better is just to do some of the low-level fasting. If there's a radio show that you listen to this week, I want to recommend that you listen to Warren Kramer. He's the person who does the macrobiotic work for individuals. He's got some marvelous, some golden suggestions. If you're serious about seeing reversal of your symptoms, listen to his suggestions. They're all practical. They're things that you can do now, today. They're not specific to any name of a particular diet. But I have to say, of the many people that I've interviewed on the radio show who've talked about diets, what he said to me made the most sense of all. I was truly and profoundly impressed by his suggestions. So go to the radio show page, Warren Kramer, macrobiotic diet. Macrobiotic sounds like pretty esoteric. There's nothing esoteric about what he said. It's all very, very practical. I have to also say to all of you, I can look and see how many people have listened to various radio shows, and not that many people have listened to that show, and it's one of the best that I've aired in the last 6 months. So check it out. I think you'll be pleased you did. I think you'll find there'll be a recommendation in there that you can take home, implement, and I'm guessing find some relief from whatever symptoms you are currently confronting. I have another comment about diet. Now, everyone that asks questions, and I think I've got 100%. I've probably got 1,000 questions that have been asked over the years. What's the best diet? What's the best diet for PD? What's the best diet? So it's a very common question for me to address. I think there's actually a better question for you to ask yourself. Instead of asking yourself, what do you put into your body? What's the best kind of thing for you to eat or ingest? I think for the biggest result, the better question to ask is, what do you need to stop eating? What do you need to eliminate? Eliminating the bad stuff is going to take you a lot farther than working on trying to figure out what the good stuff ought to be that you basically eat. Now, for many interviews that I'll do, I'll sort of get to the idea of, okay, how about sugar? Is that kind of a problem for you? And oftentimes answers are, well, it really has been my whole life, and I've struggled with this off and on, but I'm doing better. Now, if you have neurological symptoms, the statement that I want to make is doing better is not good enough. You have to cut out sugar. Sugar is the ultimate toxin. So basically, got to say goodbye to sugar. Now, I have had an interesting question submitted just after the last program about, all right, what's the best sugar that I can use for my body? I found stevia has toxins in it, et cetera, et cetera. I'm really stumped. So the best thing, quite frankly, that you can do is stop using sweeteners altogether. And that's a little difficult because if you have candida, those little bacterial infections of the candida are screaming out, feed me, and what they eat is sugar. And so it winds up being a deep emotional problem for everyone. So you have to, at the outset, recognize if candida is your problem, you're going to have to work on clearing out the candida infection overgrowth in your body. You got to have some candida for digestion, but the problem is there's an overgrowth, and then it begins to literally control you. You just have this infatuation with having to have more and more and more and more sugar. If there is any sweeteners that you need to use, I would recommend something you might not have even heard about, and that's coconut sugar. Coconut sugar. There's coconut flour. There's coconut oil. Believe it or not, there's also coconut sugar. Go get it. Use that. You can also use honey. Those would be the two that I would put at the top of the list. The other kind of comment that Warren Kramer made that I found also fascinating is eating foods attracts more foods. So that means if you're eating meat every day, you're going to crave and need and demand more and more meat every single day, every single week. If you're eating a lot of vegetables, then over just a short period of time, your body's going to crave more and more and more and more vegetables. So we're drawn to begin to eat what it is that we've already eaten in the past. If you want to then make a shift, then it's going to be tough to eliminate sweeteners. But in the long run, your body's going to all of a sudden get very acclimated to that. And let's say if you're a coffee drinker and you're always putting sweeteners into your coffee, if you eliminate that, it's going to be tough. You're going to think the coffee really tastes awful. It's just really repulsive. Well, stick with it. And I think you'll find after 2 weeks or 3 weeks, if you try to put any sweetener into it, you're going to think, ooh, this is awful. In other words, you're going to like the coffee without any particular sugar in it. And I'm actually responding to a follow-up question from Benny from the last class, which is finding that stevia has a lot of toxins, what would I recommend? And so my suggestion, Benny, to you is, basically consider coconut sugar, consider organic honey, consider the possibility that if sugar is an issue, sugar cravings are an issue, you may have a candida overgrowth, which needs to be addressed. Now, there's a final comment that I want to make, and that is, all right, so you have a sugar craving. Why is that? And one of the typical reasons for that is that the body is not getting the nutrition that it needs. And so the other kind of a step that you can make is instead of focusing on the sweeteners, focus on good, healthy nutrition, which means live food, not processed food. Takes a little effort, takes a little attention, takes a little focus, takes a little discipline. In the early stages, it may feel like you're not quite as full as you'd like to be. It doesn't feel quite right, but stick with it. The intention that you've set is to get well. That's one of the big important ways to make that happen. Next question comes from Ann. Question is, should I go off levodopa? It does not help much. Thanks, Ann. Well, I'm not a medical doctor, Ann, so I can't make a recommendation about going on or off medications, but my own sense is I think our best resources when it comes for making decisions is always our own instinct, our own wisdom. And in this case, I think what you're sensing is I think your own instinct says the medication is not helping. And so I would always trust that. I would say, okay, your instinct is saying you're taking this medicine, but it's not really providing any benefit. That happens to people, and some people get enormous benefit from medicines, other people do not. So it's not unusual for you to see that you're being challenged with taking this medicine. The molecular size of medicines is much larger than the body is accustomed to assimilating. So sometimes side effects of medicines can be more of a problem for some people than other people. So everybody is different. Now, what I want to say to you, Ann, however, is it almost sounds like you're thinking you'll just stop taking this. And let me just suggest, don't just go cold turkey. I have had calls from individuals who will tell me, I just got out of the emergency room. I was there for 2 days. I went cold turkey on my medicines, and I got seriously sick. You don't want to go to the emergency room. So work with your doctor on slowly weaning yourself off of that medicine, which means taking a little less every week or every several days. Little less, little less. It may take some time for you to wean off completely. Your body basically becomes somewhat addicted to these medicines. They get used to receiving them. So when all of a sudden you eliminate it, the body can really have a serious reaction. And you do not want to experience that. So visit with your doctor and tell them that if you feel like the medicine is not working and you'd like to reduce that. Or alternatively, you can employ a compounding pharmacist. There are great resources for helping you to be able to reduce medicines. And so they might be able to provide some wonderful resource and relief as well. Next question comes from Rika. And Rika's got a great question. It is, quote, how can I massage my own feet? What a great question. Well, Rika, there is a little massage technique that you can learn about by doing a little search on the internet that some people have found really does help. Now, it's a great technique for somebody else to do for you. So they can learn how to do it and they can do it for yourself, or you can do it to yourself as well. The particular procedure is called Yin Tui Na. Let me spell that for you. Y-I-N, second word, T-U-I, third word, N-A. Now, if you're having problems bending down or even getting to your feet, let me just suggest, okay, why not give yourself a gift? This is the holiday season. Go to a reflexologist and get them to massage your feet. It is a wonderful healing in itself. Reflexologists typically are not that expensive. You can get a wonderful therapy for about 45 minutes for anywhere from $25 to $50. And so think of reflexology as a therapy that you might want to make as a matter of routine. Why is foot massage so useful? Well, you are accessing the various meridians in the body. So when you're touching any spot on the bottom of the feet, you're also connecting to a very specific organ or location in the physical body. Could be in the chest, could be in the brain, could be in the neck, wherever. So feet massages can be very healing. I would recommend that you learn how to do the Yin Tui Na, or go to a reflexologist and have them nurture and hold you and treat you. What a better gift to give yourself than that. Next question from Debbie. I recently purchased a Jimby drum to restore my rhythm and arm strength for my Parkinson's. Have you found anything on drumming for PD? Well, yes, indeed, Debbie. I found pretty much everything there is to find after 13 years. I have an interview with an individual with Parkinson's symptoms who found that drumming offered enormous symptomatic relief for the individuals that she worked with in groups as well as for herself. Her name is Heather McTavish, M-A-C-T-A-V-I-S-H. The radio show interview was aired April the 22nd, 2010. Heather is also the author of a wonderful book, Songs, Science, and Spirit. So listen to that interview, and I think you'll find the one of the reasons drumming is so helpful is it helps enormously with grounding. And one of the reasons tremors can be so problematic is that grounding is an issue. There's too much energy around the head and too little around the foundation of the body, the feet and the trunk. And that's why drumming can be so incredibly helpful. It's fun. It's interesting. You can do it yourself or you can do it in groups. I quite frankly don't understand why all support groups don't begin their sessions with some drumming, at least 15 or 20 minutes. I think you'll find everybody will instantly feel a great deal better. Now, I also want to suggest to those of you who are listening that we do have a Parkinson's Recovery membership, and I've created that to make it easy to find these resources that I'm indicating to you. Now, you can go to the radio show page, which is freely available. I pay a fortune every year to make all of that available to everyone. And you can scroll back and locate Heather's interview, April the 22nd, 2010. You have to scroll back about 6 or 8 pages because each page has about 20 different show listings. Some of the shows are a bit difficult to find. But for Parkinson's Recovery members, I've got a show page with everything categorized. So it's really easy to click on, okay, drumming, and then you have her show that shows up right there. Members also gather together every month, the last Monday of every month, and we connect by phone, just as we are right now. And we talk with one another. What's up? What did you find? I tell everybody what I've discovered that month that is a new and promising therapy. So let me suggest for those of you who would like to get all of your questions answered every month, which is what I do, and those of you who are looking for some significant additional support, memberships are available. The cost is only $10 a month. That's it. That pays for the technology. And basically, we have lots of services, lots of websites that I update every single day with meditations, with mindfulness challenges, with get this jokes so that you'll laugh and make dopamine naturally. We have a quote of the day that's an inspirational quote, a recipe of the day that's a natural recipe. There's a full potpourri of support services, all of which support what is required to return into a state of full health and wellness. There's a little link on the radio show page. You can sign up for the membership right there. We'll be convening together for our support group here at the end of November in November. But you can also listen to all the replays of previous support group sessions over the previous months. And I'm telling you, you'll hear people who will discuss some of the most fascinating decisions that have resulted in some wonderful recovery experiences. I mean, there's just great discussions, wonderful ideas from people who are a part of Parkinson's recovery audience. So please consider becoming a member. It would make a great deal of difference to me to be able to connect with you every month and hear your stories of what's working and what's not. It's also, by the way, how I get ideas for who can be new guests on the radio show. Next question comes from Anita. Have you heard of using shungite? It's from Karelia in Russia for EMF, etc. protection for those of us exposed to masks and the like. So the fact is, Anita, that crystals are amazing resources for people. I don't know why more people don't know that. Crystals are actually live entities. They're not like you think mostly of stones as being dead. Well, that's true. But crystals are basically living entities. And so if you want to clear yourself out, if you've had some exposure to unpleasant experiences, you're feeling pretty down and dark and low, basically what you need to have is some crystals that you can access. You hold the crystals, and get this, everybody, the crystals absorb all of that dark energy, and you'll begin to feel much lighter. We have in our bedroom a set of 12 crystals. They look like castle crystals, and hold them on occasion when the day has been particularly challenging and difficult. Either Deborah or myself or both of us, we sometimes sleep with them in bed. So crystals are enormous resources. Shungite is one, but I just want to say they happen to be one of many, many different crystals. You don't have to pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars for this resource. We got each of the little crystals that we used from a website. I don't know which one, but Deborah got these for the cost of something like $10 a crystal. So you can get them at a reasonable cost. I think a good little adventure for anybody would be to go to a store that has crystals and then just pick them up and hold them and see if all of a sudden you don't get a surge of delicious energy. So your body will respond to certain crystals more so than others. And I just want to suggest why not go and at least acquire one crystal that you can use as a matter of course. Incidentally, once you hold the crystal and it has absorbed the dark energy, you have to recharge it. So you have to put it back in the sunshine or at least in the moonlight so that it will recharge. You can't just keep it under the covers. As for EMF protection, the interview that I've done about a person who knows all about EMF is basically he reported he did not know of really anything much that could provide protective support for electromagnetic field exposure. And I kind of had to trust his insight. He basically said the best thing you can do is to reduce exposure. So don't be holding cell phones up to your ear. Keep them at a distance from your body. Don't live near cell phone towers. Don't have smart meters, et cetera, et cetera. Basically, distance yourself from anything that's electromagnetic field exposure. We get enough of that as it is. I mean, these satellites are booming down this radiation to all of us every day. So the best you can do is, as I say, reduce exposure. Whether the crystal can help with that, I don't know. But why not use it? It certainly will have that benefit, if not others as well. There's a book by Anthony Williams called The Medical Medium. In it, Anthony claims all PD symptoms are symptoms of mercury toxicity. I believe there is some merit to his book and love listening to his talks. He does a great one on PD and mercury. There's no doubt about it, Anita. There's extensive research evidence that suggests that, yes, indeed, mercury toxicity is a contributor to Parkinson's symptoms. I want to also say it sounds like his argument is, well, that's the only cause. And I would say, no, speaking as a researcher, it ain't the only cause. If this was the only cause, we would have this problem licked a long time ago. There are many, many toxins that cause neurological challenges. Mercury is one of the important ones. It's one of the dominant ones, but any of these heavy metals can cause the same problem. Pesticides cause the same problem. Toxins cause the same problem, and there are many of them that are basically culprits. So mercury, yes, indeed, he's right on target. That's a big factor, but it's not the only factor. There are many, many, many others. In our Jumpstart to Recovery course, as we've been talking just this week, the process I recommend to everyone is figure out what the cause of your symptoms might be first. Then you can identify therapies or a therapy that will help you address the causes. And incidentally, let me mention before I forget that today I have the consultations, private consultations that I offer to individuals at 50% discount. So they're normally $150, and now if you register today, it's only $75, in other words, half off. I only do this once a year. You can sign up for as many as you would like. It's my way of providing ongoing support for those of you who are a bit stumped or puzzled about what steps to take. And the process of those consultations is to really sink in and together we figure out, okay, what are the probable cause or causes of your symptoms? And once we both can kind of settle on, okay, it sounds like we know pretty much what that is, then together we sort through, all right, what kind of therapeutic decisions can you make that will address healing that cause? So it's a very focused kind of a discussion. I also do coaching for people who get off track, so if you need that as well. So my mission is to help more and more people find reversal of the symptoms that they experience, and this is just one of the ways that I do that. All of the expenses that you pay for the consultations, the $75, 100% of that goes to pay for expenses of Parkinson's recovery. So you're helping others be able to access all of these free resources when you actually sign up for a consultation. So sign up. Today's it. This is the only time we give this generous offer. It's my holiday gift to everyone. Now, Myrna is the next question, and she says, thank you so much for this opportunity to ask my unanswered questions. You are welcome, Myrna. I have been searching on the internet for someone who knows FSR, Forceless Spontaneous Release Technique. I haven't found any. Do you have any contacts or know of a school that teaches FSR in Los Angeles, California? So, Myrna, you will discover that mental health counselors oftentimes are certified in FSR. It has been shown to be an evidence-based method. And so when mental health counselors use this technique on their clients, they can write it up and get insurance reimbursement. That's why so many of them have been certified to use that technique. If you begin to call around to mental health counselors or psychologists, I think you'll be surprised at how many of them use FSR. Now, you can also, on the internet, learn and use something called EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique, which you may be familiar with. It's certainly not FSR, which uses more where you're looking and where you're tapping and what you're saying. And, of course, you get the support and assistance of a counselor in doing that. You can do EFT yourself. You can tap yourself. And so it will also provide some of the support and relief, I think, that you are looking for. So EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique, you'll find lots of videos that give demonstrations of how to do it. I've also got some explanatory information about EFT on the online Jumpstart to Recovery course. It's something that I've used before, and other people who use it tell me, yeah, it really does help. I mean, why doesn't everybody use this? So, in conclusion, please contact a mental health counselor. Ask them, do you practice FSR? I'm interested in getting that. And I think you'll find one out of two, at least, are certified in using FSR. More questions from Davis. How does one stop dystonia, the involuntary curling of the toes? So, one of the questions, of course, is what's the cause? And I would highlight your attention to your gallbladder. Typically, those kinds of issues are a gallbladder issue, and it may be that there are some infections or toxins in the gallbladder that need to be cleared. An actual treatment that you can give yourself is magnesium lotion, magnesium. You literally just put that on your toes, and I think there's a pretty good chance, from what other people have told me and what I've discovered myself, that that can provide some pretty immediate relief. When I get cramping in my calves, I can take that magnesium oil and put it on my calves, and in a matter of about 5 minutes, the cramping is gone, if not earlier. The bodies that we live in today are severely deficient in magnesium. And so after I take a shower every day, I put magnesium on my feet and on my arms, because the fact is that we don't get enough in the food that we actually eat. So I would say to anybody listening to this, whether you have Parkinson's symptoms or not, magnesium is essential. I think the better way to give it to your body is in a lotion or an oil. I don't like the oil personally. I like the lotion. So consider giving your body that essential supplement that's probably deficient in you as it is in everybody else. And I think you'll find it really will help the dystonia. And then, of course, addressing the cause, which is, if I'm right, and that's, of course, just a pure speculation, if it is the gallbladder, then addressing toxins in the gallbladder will help that enormously. And now, when cells are exposed to energy sources such as pulsed electromagnetic fields, light energy, as was discussed in one of the recent radio programs, or from sound-generating devices like the Smart Lounge, do the cells carry that energy with them, or it is only utilized in the immediate vicinity of the energy source? It really depends if you're looking at, for example, light therapy on whether or not it's laser or diffuse. The laser light therapy literally is a directed light, and it goes directly into the location that the light is directed in. Diffuse is basically not directed. It's just light energy. So in one of the fascinating interviews that I conducted on a technology called Violite, it's a gamma device that basically sends light therapy to the brain, that's diffuse. And so that would be expected to mostly penetrate the cells of the brain, not the feet or the calves or the trunk. Now, it depends on what the technology is that's being used. There's a therapy called biophoton therapy, where essentially they are assessing the blockages in the meridians by simply putting a little probe in the points on the hands and the feet that link up to these various meridians. So when they do that, they're sending light directly through the meridian to see if there's an obstruction or a blockage. So that sends it right up that specific meridian, not all meridians, but that specific meridian. So it kind of depends on what the source of the exposure is. If you're just looking at light in general, well, it goes to all the cells. So it depends. It's not an easy question to answer. It's not one that I've had in the past. But I would say light, in my opinion, light therapy is the medicine of the future. And in terms of the Violite gamma light therapy that we discussed with the inventor of that, I was very, very impressed with his invention. And I am very impressed with the evidence on dementia. And so it looks like if anybody out there listening has any issue with dementia, problems with remembering, problems with tracking, mental acuity that seems to be fading, then I would seize the opportunity to give this particular therapy a try. The initial evidence was just incredible. And there are other studies, there are other researchers that are touting this looks like this is the therapy of the future for people who have neurological challenges. Now, what about the other symptoms of Parkinson's? Well, we have some preliminary evidence that suggests that it looks like it's providing some support, but we don't know yet. I don't really have very many reports at all, so I can't say that I know a lot about how it might support these other kind of therapies. But I do know for any issues with regard to dementia that that's a real winner. The company's been quite wonderful, I might add, and they, when I called, gave my audience members a 10% discount. And a reason why I was so impressed with this therapy is that they offer the opportunity for people to use it for 6 months, not 30 days, 6 months. And if at the end of 6 months you find any relief, then you can return it for an 80% refund. I thought, whoa, these people believe in their product, and they want to get it out there. They want to get people using it. The other reason I'm recommending that Violite gamma therapy for people with Parkinson's is all members of the family can use it. So if your spouse is having some mental challenges, she or he can use that same technology themselves. If a child is struggling with some college courses or high school courses that are a part of the household, well, they can use it too, because that apparently basically sharpens up the memory. So I think it has the potential to help a lot of people in the family. So it seems like to me there is some risk in being able to purchase it. I think the cost that they had listed is like $1,700 and some $50. With a 10% discount, it's a little less. So it is something that costs a little money. But compared to some of these other therapies, boy, I have to say, I think it's potentially a winner. I'll be coming out here as I hear more reports back on what we've learned about the use of that light therapy. I do personally think sound therapy and light therapy are the therapies of the future. Next question comes from Mark Itian. And it basically is the following. What about Helicobacter pylori and Parkinson's? How do you eradicate this naturally? And what about Epstein-Barr virus and Parkinson's? How do you eradicate it naturally? Okay, these are viruses. And a lot of people have the idea, okay, what we've got to do is we've got to kill the virus. And that's what antibiotics are designed to do. The downside of antibiotics is they destroy your digestive system, although you can repair that, you can build that back up with some probiotics. But second of all, the antibiotics really aren't that great with viruses, as I'm sure you are probably aware. They're a little better with bacterial infections, but they don't get them all. So you're going to still have some of the residue of that in your body. Some researchers are reporting that as much as 80 or 90% of the world population has Epstein-Barr, that it's really a pretty dominant kind of an infection. So why aren't people dying right and left? And the answer is the body has a way of sequestering and corridoring off these infections. They either mutate them so that they're not as dangerous, or they literally just sort of put them in a closet and shut the door so that they don't cause any significant harm to the essential organs. So in essence, a lot of us live with these infections, but our body is able to contain them successfully. So if you're asking, okay, what can I do to get rid of these, what I would suggest is there are some herbal remedies that can be useful for building up the immune system, and then it's the immune system that addresses the problem of the virus and the infections. So the key is the immune system. Anything you can do to make that stronger will help. And, of course, if we go back to diet, that's one of the key steps you can take. Exercise is key because it eliminates some of the toxins through the skin. There is a little herbal remedy that I've used sometimes for viruses and infections that's basically garlic in nature. And so using a lot of garlic can sometimes be a great benefit as well. If you listen to the Warren Kremer interview that I did last week on macrobiotics, he recommends doing a little rub using garlic on your spine. And that's the same thing. Basically, it's using garlic to build up the immune system. I would do that every day if I were you. So that would be a natural way that you can approach strengthening your immune system, which in turn addresses these problems with viruses and infections. A lot of people get very upset when their medical professional tells them they have one horrible infection or another. I just want to say, speaking as a researcher, that it's incredible what our body is able to do. I mean, if you really looked seriously at all of the infections our body has been able to contain, it's just unbelievable. And we still have, everybody, some infections that are still present. It's not as if we can eliminate them all. And so the body is able to do it. The key is not to necessarily, as I see it, speaking as a researcher, to focus on any specific virus or any specific infection, but rather to say, all right, let's build up the immune system. Now, finally, there is one particular new technology that may provide some specific ability of the body to be able to recognize these infections exist. One of the reasons the body doesn't know it is because of whiplash. It could be because of a physical accident. So the brain is cut off from the body, literally, and the body doesn't even know the infection is there. So you can address the problem of whiplash, and once you do that, then all of a sudden the body realizes, oh, I see the infection is there. We'll go ahead and take care of that. So the technology that has been invented here in the last 3 or 4 years is called biontology, and there may be a biontologist, a practitioner near where you actually live. So that would be something that could specifically target that virus. And basically what they do is when they identify that's a factor, and they can do that through sending light through the various meridians of the body, then they have antidotes, basically the reverse of what that is, and that alerts the body that, in fact, that particular problem exists. And next, Mark asks, what's the situation now with mannitol? Is it working or not? I don't actually know, Mark. I've used it myself, and I did find that mentally I became sharper, which is a good sign. I've had other people to report that they felt like it was providing some benefit. And so I really have to say I don't have any systematic significant evidence to report. I do know that it does cause some gassing, and it can be a bit unpleasant. But other than that, it's a remedy that I know is helping some people find some significant reversal from their symptoms. It's a natural sugar, by the way. It's used in products for diabetics. So diabetics that insist on eating candies, candies are essentially sweetened with a substance in the mannitol here. That's basically what it is. It's a sugar. And then basically what they'll argue is, well, this doesn't have any sugar in it, and it's good for diabetics, which is, I'm sure, the case, except for the other ingredients that are not good for diabetics. So that's about the best that I've got. I don't see any reason why you shouldn't at least give mannitol a try. I don't know any side effects other than the problem of gassing. Next question from Kaneo. And here I am taking some medicines, and they list the medicines here. And I'm a diabetic, and I'm taking insulin daily, a pretty high dose of insulin. I'm very weak. I can't walk more than 10 minutes. Is there hope? And so, Kaneo, I would just say, well, yes, the body can always heal itself. I would say for you that probably the best thing you can do for yourself is to pay some particular attention to your diet. What we know about people who have diabetic conditions is if they make a significant change in their diet, they can basically reverse their diabetes. And that sounds like that's your main problem, especially with all the weakness involved. So I would say listen again, if you need to my discussion on some dietary recommendations, and see if you can't make some changes with your diet and see that you can maybe gain some more strength and stamina just from making that one change itself. This question from Elizabeth. My partner, 56, is suffering from Parkinson's already for 12 years. Medication is difficult because of severe side effects. He is now heading for deep brain stimulation in Germany next year. I read about other measures of new treatments, but cannot find links anymore. Oh, by the way, Elizabeth, you can always email me if you're trying to find a resource, or of course, join Parkinson's Recovery membership. And we talk every month, we talk all the time, and I can always lead you directly to any source that you actually might need. Again, Elizabeth, you didn't hear earlier, that's just $10 a month, so it's just a fee to help pay for the technology that we use. Question continues. Please, could you help me at least give me some advice where to consider some of these other therapies? Thank you so much for your work. It is always helpful to read and not to be alone. Well, Elizabeth, I have a couple of suggestions for you. One of them is, as an alternative to deep brain stimulation, the researchers are now doing trial studies on a therapy called focused ultrasound. You go into an MRI and they basically focus some sounds directly into the substantia nigra. It was a technology developed in Israel. It's being spread now across the states and in Europe. In Germany, I think there may be some trials going on in Germany. I don't know, but it's possible you could join in and be a participant in one of the trials. It looks like it does help. It may substitute for DBS in the future. It is expensive. One listener told me that it cost $18,000 for just one treatment, and you don't get everything done in one treatment. It takes a series of treatments, so it's expensive. It is a bit invasive, but not as invasive as deep brain stimulation therapy. Something to consider, because it sounds like your main interest is in suppressing symptoms, and I think that's what focused ultrasound does. It's not a healing from the inside out. It basically is a therapy that suppresses symptoms. But again, the initial results are encouraging. It looks like it will have at least some short-term positive effects worth investigating and being on the lookout to see in the future if, in fact, that might become available to you in Germany. Now, a second idea that I've got for you is what I mentioned a little bit earlier, and I don't know exactly what the symptoms are, so I don't know specifically what problems to address, but the light therapy might be something that you might want to look into. Vielight, V-I-E-L-I-G-H-T. I've got a radio show interview on Vielight light therapy about a month ago. And there's a blog as well on light therapy. I interviewed two different companies that discussed light therapy. One of them was a more medical approach. That particular device cost $11,000. So it's not one that you purchase yourself. It requires somebody who's been trained to use it. So you can go to often a chiropractor or sometimes a medical professional with other qualifications and get some treatments and see if that might actually help as well. So those are just new therapies. We don't know a whole lot about them for Parkinson's. We don't have much research evidence. But I'm interested in light therapy as I think, again, as I said for the third time, I think it's the medicine of the future. So do a little investigation about that. Maybe there is a therapy there, a medical professional, either a chiropractor or someone else who would be able to provide that service and support for you. This next question comes from Bill. I would be interested in your opinion on whether stem cell therapy holds promise for treatment of Parkinson's symptoms. And Bill, I would say, from what I can tell, and you know, let me just say as an outset, as I said about all therapies, I'll get an email from someone, and it's very clear that stem cell has helped them, that they're a whole lot better. And then the next week, I'll get another email from another person, and they'll say, well, I spent $20,000 on stem cell, and I don't see a difference. So like any therapy, it depends on the factors that are causing the symptoms, whether or not it's going to help or not. So it's not as if there's any sure bets out there. There are not. You've got to learn a lot about what's really going on. And then, of course, if the issue is toxins, well, stem cell therapy, in a way, could help that indirectly, but not directly. There are probably other therapies that can help get the toxins out of the body rather than stem cell therapy. Now, in about 10 years ago, we did a summit in Vancouver, and one of the individuals who attended came from treatment in Mexico that was a stem cell therapy treatment in Mexico. She did not talk, but her husband did. And her husband basically reported that he really felt like he had a different person in his wife, that she felt so much better. She was more herself. She didn't like to talk a lot, but still, he'd gotten her life back. And I thought, that's wonderful. So we were encouraged by that. And at the next summit in Cincinnati, I invited the same practitioner in Mexico to come up and give a presentation and bring anybody else who might, you know, provide their testimonials about whether it helped or not. Well, she didn't bring anybody else. She did give a wonderful presentation. And in the end, it looked to me like, okay, it looks like this offers the possibility of helping, but it's not going to be long-term. That was my guess and my sense, and it kind of still is my sense. I don't think this is a long-term benefit for people, but it is a short-term benefit. So if a person really is struggling, I mean, they can't function, they can't walk, they can't talk, they can't think, it's like they're at the point where, you know, is the end near, I would say, hey, maybe this is something you could just consider trying because it may jumpstart your life force. Now, having said all of that, the person who came to the summit 10 years ago and provided such a wonderful testimonial, I heard from her husband about 3 years later, and she had died. So in the end, I have to say, I don't think this is a long-term strategy that really helps. Now, the other comment that I want to make about stem cell therapy is the following. You are, when you choose this option, the option of getting help and assistance from outside. You're asking someone else out there to fix your body. In other words, you're telling your body, you're not working body, I've got to go out somewhere else and, you know, have somebody else fix this. The body knows how to make stem cells. The body can do that. The body knows how to do that. So the better question for me is to ask, okay, why isn't the body making enough stem cells? If it is not, it may be making enough, and that's not the problem. And once you address that, then you can heal from the inside out. You can figure it out yourself. So in the end, my summary, Bill, for you is, in the short term, I think it does offer potential promise, but not guaranteed by any means. Again, I've had people who tell me it didn't help and those who tell me that it really did help. If you look at the studies, ask yourself, all right, are they tracking people over the long term? And typically the answer is no. And so over the short term, great. On the long term, no. And again, my feeling, my perspective after working with this for 12 or 13 years is to say, you know, I think in the long run, the better solution is to figure out the cause, number one, and then address the symptoms. And again, that's why I have focused my attention and my energy on being able to offer these little consultations so that together we can sort through what the potential cause of your symptoms are and then what we can do about them. So sign up if you're interested. This is the one time in the year that we can do this at this really low cost. I have one last question that's been submitted, and I want to look now on the question and answer page and see if any of you have written anything. And nope, we don't have any questions that were submitted in writing. So let me go to the last question. And the question is from Barry. It is, what do you think about deep brain stimulation? Well, it's a wonderful therapy that's available for people whose medicines are no longer working. It's more recently been recommended by neurologists for people who are just starting medications. And the argument is that it will potentially reduce the need for medication increases in the future. So they're sort of two very different perspectives. You're asking for my personal feeling about deep brain stimulation. When it comes to surgery, I'm a weenie, I just have to say. I mean, just the thought of getting surgery for me is an overload. So I have a bit of a bias, and it's not a researcher's bias, it's a personal bias. And, of course, with deep brain stimulation surgery, you are incurring some pretty significant intervention. Hole in your head, a probe that goes down into the substantia nigra. You've got a wire that goes underneath the skin from the chest all the way up to the brain. I mean, that's pretty extensive intervention. And as I see it, for some people, and I've heard reports from so many people, it's the same story. So I'm sounding like a broken record now. Some people say, boy, has this really transformed my life. I can work. I can function. You know, I'm just so grateful that this has been available. Other people, they had complications. They had infections. They had some serious consequences. And basically, it was a nightmare. And that's what the initial studies say. Of course, you can get infections. Of course, there can be complications. They have now a requirement when you get deep brain stimulation, you've got to have some psychologist evaluation. That's because in the initial studies, there were some suicides. And they thought, oh, no, we've got to be very careful about who actually gets this surgery. So it's a pretty big intervention. And the good news is that for some people, it really does help. And so I'm so glad and grateful that this particular option is available for people to consider. It does have potential risks, as any surgery does, and everybody would certainly be able to recognize that. One of the downsides of this particular intervention is there is a battery in the chest. Now, the person already has neurological challenges, so that's emitting electromagnetic energy throughout the body, which is typically not the kind of thing that you want if you've got electromagnetic exposure right next to these sensitive neural networks. But the other real issue for me is that you have to change the battery periodically. It is a battery, so it's not eternal. That means surgery. So you've got to go in for outpatient surgery. The cost will vary depending on the source, but it can be $45,000 or $50,000 just to get that battery replaced. And that's obviously not pleasant. So there are some costs, and of course you've got to make regular and continuous trips to your neurologist to get the adjustments on how much to turn this on or turn it off, or when to turn it on or when to turn it off. So there's all sorts of a requirement to spend a lot of time in the doctor's office with getting their assistance and adjusting this as it is needed. It doesn't fix all symptoms. You know, you're not going to all of a sudden be normal after you get this. And that's what clearly the initial studies say. It helps some, but it doesn't help others. So in the end, if a person is basically at the limit of medications, they can't be prescribed any more medications, and yet the medications are less and less effective, what's your choice? And this is the one choice that's now available. It may be focused ultrasound will suddenly be available here in the coming years once they get the studies complete. My other idea for people who are considering deep brain stimulation is, well, I'm hoping, and please, do you hear the word hoping? It's not that I know this, but I'm just hoping that the light therapies might actually provide the support that a person needs to reduce medication so they don't have to take as much. I don't know if that's true, but my sense is if it does what the early research indicates it does, I think that's a big possibility. So that might be worth taking a risk. There, the cost of the Vialite, is $1,600, and then of course you can give it back after 6 months if it doesn't work. So the real risk is only about $350. Well, that's a lot less than the cost of course, deep brain stimulation surgery, which is $100,000 or $200,000. So the cost there is minimal. There are no side effects, and so it may be worth taking a risk initially to see if that might provide some ability of your body to reduce the dosage of medications. I just looked at the research on photobiomodulation, which is the word for these laser light therapies, either focused or diffuse, and I was really impressed. There are a lot of researchers out there that are saying they really have an anticipation that the light therapies really are going to be the wave of the future. They've done studies with mice and monkeys, the poor mice and the monkeys. We have to give out our little prayers that they gave their life for science. And apparently the results have just been really impressive, that they've done what the researchers had hoped. And we're beginning to see studies with humans. The ones that look at issues with dementia are incredibly promising. I mean, when I looked at the study that the researcher talked about on Vialite, it was only like five subjects, they had incredibly strong effects or results for issues of dementia, memory, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it was just incredible. They had significance for five subjects. I thought, whoa, that's a promising study. That's really incredible. Well, we don't know, folks. We really don't know. We don't have any strong evidence one way or another. But in the end, I'm a researcher. I know that it takes 10 years to get these things researched and studied and evaluated and then approved. And then, of course, the insurance can oftentimes pay for it if it's approved by the FDA. That's a long time. That's a long wait. And as far as I'm concerned, it's worth getting some early information out. So if you are so called to use this light therapy, let me know. And I'm just taking an informal tracking of what people report back so that we can get some really early sense of what this might provide in terms of a therapy that will be benefit. Speaking as a researcher and a person who has some sense of the future, I really strongly believe that the therapies of the future are going to be therapies that use light and sound. And if you look at people living 100 years from now, they're going to look back at us and think, well, that's so sad. They were just using these medicines. They were taking these pills by their mouth. When, you know, today we don't need to do that, or they might do that to a certain extent, but basically they're going to be using light and sound therapies. So we're kind of in the Middle Ages when it comes to treatments, as far as I'm concerned, speaking again as a researcher, and I think this is the wave of the future. So if you're sort of at a place where you're a little hesitant to get the DBS for whatever reason, you know, if there's some hesitation, maybe that's why you asked the question, then you might want to consider the light therapy initially to see if that helps. If not, then go for it. And we all give our prayers out that the surgery will go smoothly and effortlessly and that the actual benefits will be exactly what you had hoped you would get. Let me check the questions to see if I've got any more here. Looks like I've gone through all the pages of questions that were submitted. I'm looking through all of my papers now, and I don't see anything here in terms of a question that I need to actually address. I don't see anything that's been written. So I think we are good to go in terms of our Q&A number two for people who've submitted questions. It's been a pleasure and an honor for me to respond to each of you who've submitted these interesting questions. And it's an honor for me to offer these consultations for you over the coming years. So be sure to sign up if you'd like to get my support or my help or my assistance. I'm glad to be here for you. The whole purpose that I have set for Parkinson's recovery is to really provide the support you need to get well. And I'm willing to really do anything to make that happen. And that's what's happening on, you guessed it, the shores of the Puget Sound, where all the women are smart, all the men are, of course, handsome, and all of the children are truly loved. Know that by virtue of the fact that you have attended and have been listening to this particular program, this question and answer session with Robert Rogers, myself, founder of Parkinson's Recovery, that you indeed have entered on the road to recovery. May whatever decisions you make about your recovery be exactly the steps that you need to take to provide sustained and continuing relief from whatever symptoms you currently experience. It's been an honor and a privilege and a pleasure to offer this, my holiday gift and greeting to each of you who are members of my global audience. Thanks so much for connecting in and participating in this program today. I look forward, for those of you who are members, to connecting in the last Monday of this month, where we will gather together and find out what is up with you, what's working and what's not working. May you have a magnificent Thanksgiving holiday for those of you in the U.S., and for those of you who are in Europe and Asia and China and other countries, may you stay warm and cozy, or if you're in a warm climate, may you stay cool. Thanks so much for joining us today.